Welcome to Bedknobs and Broomflakes, the podcast that talks about witches, man-witches, warlocks, sorcerers, and other magic practitioners in movies, television, comic books, books, and, well, just about frickin' everything. Sorry, this show will include spoilers, but if you're like me and you haven't watched the second season of Sabrina yet, then, I mean, do it, man.
Where you just been? Just do it.
Where you been? I did it. You can too. My name is Linda, but this week you can call me Cheeseth.
My name is Jane, the magnificent actress extraordinaire.
Thank you, Dorcas.
This will all make sense very soon. Yes, thank you, Dorcas. God. Oh, high school all over again. Anyways.
I won't pretend that scene hadn't spoken to me in ways that I couldn't even describe. I was just like, oh my God, I've been there. Just pull that pin. Just pull that pin. Anyway, so we are covering.
Just end my misery. It's not about me getting the part.
We are obviously covering the second episode of the second season of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Yay.
Titled The Passion of Sabrina Spellman.
Yes. I don't know. This one had a different feel. I should get this out of the way. The director was Michael Goy, and he was also known for directing he directed.
Oh God, no!
no Nicolas laugh, Cage just stuff like, just oh, yet.
Yeah, it's like ah, fuck.
But I'm sure he'll work his way up to it. Just give him some time. He has been the similar. He did stuff. He was the cinematographer for many freaking things. Like he has 74 credits under his belt for as a cinematographer, but. Most of the stuff that he did first was it can only be described as sounding at least like something that was on Cinemax or Showtime late at night.
Okay.
You have let's see, Vampire Centerfolds. And Sorority House Vampires, The Awakening of Gabriella.
Oh, that's Cinemax. I was thinking of the one that starts with a C.
And Forbidden Sins and The Pleasure Zone, which the Pleasure Zone was a series. Apparently he also was the cinematographer for The Pleasure Zone Volume 1 and Volume 2. Pleasure Zone Volume 4, Promiscuous. Nightcap and Lady Chatterley's Stories. So, yeah.
All I'm thinking right now is that you put a lot of research into this, more than probably needed to be.
Well, I saw some of these things that I was like, hello. But he did also, he was also the cinematographer for numerous episodes of My Name is Earl, The Mentalist, The Nine Lives of Chloe King, Mr. Sunshine, and Glee. And, also Salem, which we definitely have to get to eventually. And also Scream Queens and American Horror Story. So there's that.
Which we also, well, we got to get to at least one season of that in particular.
I don't want to.
Linda, you okay?
I don't want to.
Wait, which one are you thinking of for American Horror Story?
Anyone after the first.
Oh, I was referring to Coven, so yeah.
I know.
But we get to talk about Kathy Bates.
I know. And she's like one of my favorite actors of all time. But like, that's why I think that season was more upsetting for me. Because I was just, I don't know. Anyway, he has been the director for many shows as well, including American Horror Story. But he also directed an episode of Pretty Little Liars. And he also directed another episode that of Sabrina that we'll get to eventually, Chapter 26, All of Them Witches. And he directed an episode of the unfortunately short-lived Swamp Thing. And two episodes for The Gifted. And he also directed the pilot for the upcoming Avatar: The Last Airbender. So, seems like a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
And I should also say he was the director of a movie called Megan is Missing, which some people said is like should be mandatory viewing for parents. But
Is this one of those things where like I need to cry or something? Because
I think so. it's about these two girls who, from what I gathered, these two girls who are friends online and they like to chat with boys online, and a cyber stalker or someone nabs them. So.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at this. Dang, it's banned in New Zealand.
Good okay. Damn. Well, I know that it was like 5 out of 10 stars on IMDb, but I mean, that could mean nothing.
That's other people rating it. Sometimes they're not rating the movies on IMDb. They're, well, yeah. I've seen some people like rate the quality of whatever they watch, like the actual like they got like a bad copy of a DVD. I'm like,
that's true too.
Although yeah. My other favorite was, I think when we were, one of the movies we were looking up to watch recently, I didn't tell you this, but I read the one of the reviews and the review just said, it's teaching kids how to French kiss. And I'm like,
oh boy.
And that was the review. I was like, I'm sorry, what?
I'm out of 5 stars.
I think they gave him a 2 out of 10 on IMDb. I'm like, really? Okay.
Yeah. That's a thing. As part of Videorama, Donnie finds like the best of the worst reviews he could find on Amazon. And we've heard some interesting stuff. Like, I think, I can't remember which one, but one of them, like, people were complaining. Oh, it's Pan's Labyrinth. People were complaining because, like, giving it bad reviews because it didn't have, like, English dubbed.
I knew that was going to be the complaint. I was like, let me guess, because there's no English dub and it's just in subtitles because people are fucking lazy assholes.
Well, there was one guy who actually made a good case for it. Like his wife was, I think that like she was sight impaired or something like that. And
well, I think
she obviously doesn't speak Spanish. So
yeah. No, I mean, I can see that, but most of the times the people who are complaining about it not having English dubbed, they're not complaining about the fact that they're...
They got to read in that non-American language. Yeah,
let's be fair to this. It's
no, yeah, that definitely was most of the complaints, but then you know, I felt bad because I was just like... Goddamn lazy bastards. Like, you know, just enjoy the fucking movie. But then like he shared that review and I was like, oh, I'm a judger. Like, oh, but anywho, The one of the writers for this was Christina Hamm. And this is actually really cool because I looked into it and this was her first writing gig for television. So television or movies. So actually, it looks like she's just done television. But yeah, it is her first time in this media. Anyway, Linda goes sleepy soon. I have not had any caffeine today and it shows. But yeah, this
so we will not be discussing anything after we turn off the mics.
Yeah, especially because I'm going to take my muscle relaxer, and if we would be discussing anything, it'd be like, Linda go sleepy.
You just start mainlining it while you're recording.
Yeah. Well, it'd make it for an interesting episode, I'm sure. But yeah, no, so this was her first gig in television, and it's really awesome. So it was this one, and then she also wrote A Big Fat Liar. Her first gig was actually Chapter 9, The Returned Man. And then it was this. But she's also written a couple episodes of Them and two of the episodes of Sweet Tooth, which if you haven't watched it, you should. It's so freaking good. I freaking love Sweet Tooth. Can't wait for it to come back. The comic and the show are just really awesome. And the guy who wrote the comic, just a really good, like, awesome, modest guy. But also, she wrote a couple episodes for Brand New Cherry Flavor, which is, it's been on my list for a while, and I've heard some good things. But she's also acted as the producer for 4 episodes of Brand New Cherry Flavor and 1 episode of Sweet Tooth, the episode Sorry About All the Dead People. So, really, Sweet Tooth is awesome. But also, I looked her up because I was thinking, like, how did she just start off in television? You know, I mean, did she know somebody? I mean, chances are she's had some sort of, like, background, you know, something that made her attractive to the whoever's, like, you know, hiring for the staff. And sure enough, she's actually really awesome. She was she's a very celebrated playwright. In fact, she wrote the 4 Little Girls, Birmingham, 1963.
Oh.
Yeah, which was directed by Felicia Rashad. And it was actually performed in the Kennedy Center, and it was totally sold out. And it was for the 50th anniversary of the Baptist Church bombing that it was about. But she also wrote Ruby, the story of Ruby Bridges. And she also wrote, this is one I really, really wanted to see. And by the time it came up here, it was COVID times, so I couldn't. I was too afraid to go out. It was, Nina Simone, 4 Women.
Oh
yeah. I love Nina Simone. And I was just like, oh, God damn it. Like, I really want to see this. Like, son of a bitch. Oh, but, yeah, she's done a lot of stuff, and, just the more I find out, the more awesome she gets. Also, let me go back to my notes here. She is a member of the Kilroys, a group that advocates for equal representation of women, trans, and non-binary writers on American stages. So, yeah, Christina Hamm, everybody.
Just the way you say that, I feel like you're trying to do like a weird Stewie Griffin accent.
No,
I'm so actually, much emphasis on the H.
I'm going for the Toast of London with Matt Berry. And he has John Hamm on an episode because apparently John Hamm was a real big fan of the show. And last I heard, he's bringing it to America. So I really want to see this. But Toast of London is fucking amazing. But whenever he says John Hamm's name, it's John Hamm. He's got lots of charisma. It's another show I highly, highly suggest, but it has nothing to do with this. So.
Exactly. We haven't strayed, but we've gone in a direction.
Although Donnie does accuse me of going full Matt Berry in that show and full Stewie Griffin or Stewie Griffith when it comes to the WHs. The like Will Wheaton. Where? Who? Why? Wheat thins. But yeah, sorry for that.
Do Wicker Man.
Yes, we did cover Wicker Man. And I think that for this show, we definitely should cover Wicker Man.
Oh, God.
The original the better one.
Yes. The original and the better one. They're kind of the same thing, aren't they? I don't know what you're talking about. I've only seen the original.
Yeah. The best one with Nicolas Cage, of course.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, Nicolas Cage stars in The Wicker Man. So you're welcome for all that ASMR, that beautiful ASMR. God. I guess
we should. When you mentioned Nicolas Cage's name.
I guess we should probably talk about the episode, huh?
Yep. Which I'm going to start out with saying I cannot say a damn thing regarding the first scene that it opens up with, because as for those who remember, with the previous episode, it ended with Lucifer showing up at Lilith's /
cabin,
you know, Wardwall's door. Yeah. In full-on ram's head fashion. And their conversation, I'm just like, I know too much. I actually wrote down, I can't comment. Because everything they're talking about, I'm just like, I'd reveal too much.
So. As you're describing it, I kind of see him there with a pack of beer. Ding dong. Hey, how's it going?
He only brings Bud Light, though.
Yeah, she's like, Milwaukee's best. Oh, Satan. Oh, you. You devil, you. What you gonna do?
It's hell. What do you want? It's not a pleasure.
I guess he'd bring like a pack of PBR probably in reality, or
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
IPA. God, I hate IPA so much.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, because they're making, I can give away this much, obviously, because this is what happens in the scene. They are making a wager about Sabrina. Because right. Lilith is all like, why you want Sabrina? And saying it's like, she needs to come to me. And yeah, that's about as much as I'm going to reveal. So they make a wager that Sabrina's mortal soul, that's still part of her, is too good that she won't listen to him.
And she won't choose anything on the path of evil.
Yeah. The path of night.
Yes. But
and so they make a wager. It's very both there's a couple of things going on, because there's two stories that occur here, both biblical stories. So you got the story of Job, the devil and God make a wager in this case that Job will keep praising God even if, you know, like Job doesn't have all the nice things and is visited upon by like horrible shit.
And he'll keep it he'll keep his faith.
Yeah, kind of a, depending on how far into that story you read, kind of a shitty lesson.
You know, not only a shitty lesson, but like Is that the kind of God you want in your corner? It's like, let's throw the worst shit at him.
If I remember correctly, and listeners can correct me on Twitter on this, is that after God delivers all the shitty stuff, kills Job's family, blah, 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 and Job keeps praising him, I think God does actually return Job's riches. So,
but
at the same time, yes, the basic story of, like, you know, if you just keep praising God, like, it's okay, even if he, like, you know, gives you horrible shit. So it's like, yeah, okay.
But, like, had he not, then what would he have done? Like, oh, well, you shouldn't have pussied out, man. Like, you should have kept worshiping me, man. Like,
you caused me to lose a bet, man.
Yeah.
So there's you. That part of the story. And then towards the end, it's a very Abraham Isaac situation. But we'll tell that at the end because it makes more sense there to be more of an Abraham Isaac story at the end. But yes, at first it sounds like a very Job-like thing.
Well,
but
and we have seen, like, in a previous episode that where she fucking kills Stolas, her familiar.
Lilith.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Not Sabrina. No. I was like, wait.
God, that would be a different story. Lilith kills Stolas, who we find out in this episode has been basically been her familiar since day one. But before she kills Stolas, she was saying basically, like, no, I should be at his right hand. I should be the one given power. And it seems to me that he wants Sabrina to be his tool and the lady by his side. So fuck that. And then Stolas is like, yeah, but do you really want to double cross Satan? And she was like, I kill you now. And he was like, oh no. And that's exactly how it went.
Stolas is like, oh no.
Oh no.
And kill me.
I am slain.
I dead now.
And that's when we find out that, like, her familiar, unlike the other familiars, was, you know, talking out loud.
Yeah. Yes, we can actually hear Stolas' thoughts, or at least his conversation. But yeah, anyway, so yes, they make a wager and Satan visits Sabrina and gives her the ultimate test, which is, do you want to say what it is?
No, go ahead.
Okay. He says that he needs her to steal something, a pack of gum.
Yeah.
That's like, it.
What?
Yeah. Well, and Sabrina does, because even she's confused. She has that exact same look of like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Pack of
like, there's
gum?
Not like a sack of kittens you need me to drown. Yeah. There's like, I mean, what the hell? And she goes down to, goes down to the breakfast table, and Ambrose and Zelda and Hilda are there, and she's like, so Lucifer's, and Zelda's all like, oh, you've been visited by Satan, and he's been in this house, and, she's, at first Zelda's like, she almost seems to like want to know what Sabrina's been asked, but she's like, no, don't tell me. And Ambrose and Hilda have this reaction where it's sort of like, we've been asked something similar and it bothers them to no end, which plays out later in very, very tragic ways. So yeah, it's, but yeah, Zelda's all like, oh, like, this is great. Like, you've been asked to do something for the Dark Lord. And it's just like, steal gum. Okay.
But yeah. So. And of course, like, she brings it up with Aunt Z, and she's like, the Dark Lord was in my house and I didn't even wake up. Oh, what he must think of us. That was very
fanatic,
very Zelda.
Is a word that we can use here. But yeah, and during this exact same time, you've got kind of two interlocking stories happening in both the School of Night and also at Sabrina's old high school. And they're both doing plays. In this case, Father Blackwood has written a play, The Passion of Lucifer, which I, on a technicality, I would just like to point this out because I did have to double check this in research because I remember reading a book about the origin of Satan, which is a conversation about how Satan became the light bringer to the Prince of Darkness in a more historical context. And if I remember that book correctly, and I double checked this, he isn't mentioned until much later in the Bible. Like people kind of relate the serpent to Lucifer, but he's actually, the serpent is just a serpent. It's like a demon or it's like some sort of evil force. It's never really Lucifer. They've only kind of attached it to Lucifer a little while later. But in the actual Bible, in the actual stories of the birth of Lucifer as the Prince of Darkness, it's a much later thing in the Bible when he's even mentioned, not let alone the whole progression.
Well, I read Occidental Mythology from Joseph Campbell way back in the day. And from there, he explains how at the time, the religion, like the pagan religions, were mostly about like the matriarch and like the feminine goddesses, and the woman was all about the like the symbol of life and life bringing and the circle of life. But then also you have the Ouroboros symbol of the snake eating its own tail, and the snake was also in that a symbol of life and death and the cycle. And from there, it was believed that the people trying to bring Christianity to the heathens, it was part of their ploy to bring more people over, because they decided to vilify the snake.
I was going
to
say convert, but yes, vilify the the religion that they were trying to convert people away from. So yes.
Yeah. So you have like Pan looking more like what they kind of built Satan around Pan and be like, oh, look, they're Satan worshipers and stuff. So
in a modern context, though, Pan is a dick.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's be honest.
Modern context, Pan's also a dick. I mean,
but
and that's the nicest thing you can say about it as well.
But
Greek myth is a very rapey. So is Roman myth.
So rapey. which if
lots
we
of myth
ever,
is rapey.
If we ever get around to reading the Iron Druid series, it puts a lot of the gods kind of
on blast.
Yeah. It does, and it's amazing, and I love it. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, they're trying to convert all the heathens, and next thing you know, they're worshiping the devil, and, oh, they deify the snake, which is just the devil incarnate, you know, so it's just,
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, it's like, I'm more taking it from, like, the Bible, which, of course, I guess in the case of the show, and Father Blackwood calls it the false god, and he has written more of a side story, I was going to say, a very patriarchal, women subservient story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How it plays out. I do like that there is one of the witches who's also fighting against, or is also having a little tiff with Zelda, doesn't want to convert to Father Blackwood's script. You know, she's has disagreements with the way he's written the story. And so then that's when Father Blackwood turns to Zelda and is like, we've had disagreement here. You're going to direct this. And we find out that...
because she has the best diction of all.
Yep, sure, that's the reason why.
Yeah, she's like, yes, well, I enjoy good diction. Thank you.
And he's cast, it's like a four-person play. He's cast Sabrina as the understudy, in this case, to the Lilith character in the play. And Ambrose is playing the false god. You got Nicholas Scratch playing Lucifer, and Agatha playing Stolas. So that's... and. This I honestly like this episode a lot. I don't think it was as well regarded as some of the other ones, but I think it's both this is actually a good kind of telling of the Lilith Lucifer story, as you said, and also find out she's had Stolas with her for a long time. But also, it's for a demon goddess. You see Lilith's humanity in this.
Yeah.
Especially at the end. It's a very good, it's more of a character builder for Lilith than anything else. Even though you've got other things going on, because you've got the high school and you've got all the shit that's going on with how the boys are treating Theo, and you've got Harvey and Roz doing the Romeo and Juliet. So they're doing also a play, but they're doing more like readings, like you would do an English class, and they'd have to memorize a scene. So, yeah. Anyways, I'm okay ahead of myself because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in this, but the main thing is the passion of Lucifer and the story of Lilith as well in that case.
Yeah, and some beautiful acting from Dorcas.
Yes, I mean, I did try to mimic or honor the incredible acting of Dorcas as Lilith. I mean, her passion and her commitment to the character is very well portrayed, that I agree. Even though Sabrina's more wanting the lead role, I would have tossed this. I would have pulled the pin to throw the sandbag on top of Dorcas just to make it end, because her acting cannot outlive the greatness of what it was.
Oh,
it was very reminiscent of what it's like to watch young people learn how to act and.
Young people who never had acting courses.
Just people who emphasize the wrong words or like think that every word needs an emphasis.
And, so. You know, we were talking earlier about how sometimes it can be really hard as an actor to act terribly.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, hats off to Dorcas, Abigail Cohen. So
Yeah, that made me laugh on so many levels. I was like, wow, she's bringing back memories and this is perfect. So yes, I said, Dorcas is a terrible actress. Actress who plays Dorcas, excellent.
Oh.
Oh, and real quick, we mentioned that obviously like Satan was trying to convince Sabrina to pull the pin. And it's only because Satan's kind of trying to force Sabrina to do something bad, because earlier Sabrina was about to steal Fruit Stripe gum, the crappiest gum in the world.
Yes, like,
nobody would miss that.
Like impish fruit or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, it just looked like Fruit Stripe gum.
Yeah.
Just like, flavorless in less than a second. Got it. Nobody would miss that gum. And Lilith as Wardwell comes up, well, Sabrina, do you need money for that gum? And Sabrina puts back, no, nothing at all.
Are
so,
you okay?
Yeah. It's like, do you need anything? Has anybody talked to you recently?
You would never steal a pack of gum.
Yes. And it's Lucifer's kind of umping the ante, first with the idea of killing, maiming, causing horrible brain damage to Dorcas, and also at the same time trying to sabotage the budding relationship of Roz and Harvey when Sabrina's in class. She decides to go back to the class and she's going to read with the stupid jock, and she's watching Roz and Harvey do Romeo and Juliet, and it's like she's jelly.
Yeah.
She's jelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, should we real quick address the Theo incident, because I've got a lot to say on that one too.
Yeah. I feel like we have to.
Yeah, so because Theo's now wanting to use the boys' locker room. And of course, all of the boys are staying around. And as Billy Marlin says, to wait for the show. And Theo runs out and runs into Sabrina, very obviously very upset and agitated and annoyed. And yeah. And Sabrina offers him a rope that will cause Billy to trip. Real quick, though, because I made a note of this, because it's one of those weird things that it's not quite an exact Theo situation. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, and this kind of reminded me of it. Back in the day in locker rooms and hospitals, they will label doctors and nurses. I know this because my aunt is a doctor. And she and another female doctor made a stand. Got them to change that.
That's cool.
But yes, that was, oh yeah. No, I was just like, oh, for the love of God. I was like, so I've heard these stories before, and watching Theo go through that, I was like, oh, this reminds me of that horrible situation back in the past. So we're still working on some issues here, people. Yeah. Anyways, yes. Yeah, so Sabrina gives us as like a little trick for Theo to tie up Billy Marlin's shoelaces and make him trip. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell them what happens?
Oh, well, yeah. First we should say, like, she was trying to get changed in the boys' locker room, but the boys are like watching him. They're all watching Theo, and they say they're waiting for the show. Like, ugh, God, ugh.
Well, and they do other things later on in the locker room after Theo flees and finds Sabrina, because they also shove his locker full of pads and tampons and stuff. It's, yeah, you know,
which made me think of
Carrie.
Yes, like, plug it up. And I want to say that Robert Aguirre Sacasa is the one who did the updated version of Carrie, yeah, in 2013. So, or did an updated version.
I was going to say, how many have there been now?
I know.
Dead? Which one was that? My memory banks are...
Well, in the first season, we got the fun little posters about like saving water and like cutting down on water usage, and it said something about with the sink of plug it up. So, yeah, this is, I felt like it was another nod to Carrie and plug it up, but yeah, anywho, so yeah, Theo is getting more and more pissed, I think rightfully so.
Oh yeah, I actually wrote down after what happens, I was like, to be fair, kind of deserves it.
Yeah, and when she asks, when he asks Sabrina if there's anything they could do about Billy, I was thinking, like, you did, though. Did you, like, why didn't you just say, actually, I did a while ago, back in season. I mean, last year.
Well, he's not letting up, let's be fair. So
that's true. And I did like, there was this show gets kind of meta sometimes, and I love that. Where they kind of say stuff like, oh, that was a different episode type of thing. And like, in this one, Sabrina's aunt Hilda is telling her that she should go back to the, you know, her other school, her mortal school, and go back to doing part-time there, part-time at the academy. And she's saying, like, all your friends would love to see you, and there's so much going on with Roz and with Harvey and Theo. And she's like, Theo? And she's like, yeah, Susie's Theo now, catch up. I was like, yes, catch up. Where have you been, Sabrina?
signing her name in the Book of the Dead.
Apparently. But yeah. So, anywho, she tells Theo that, she gives him a knot and says, like, tie a knot in here, before the big game, and he'll keep tripping and it will embarrass the hell out of himself.
Practical joke, lol.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just keep tripping up during the big game and his friends will, you know, be giving him shit for that, and that will give you a reprieve. But Theo is so rightfully angry after the locker full of sanitary napkins and tampons.
Pads and tampons.
Yeah. Feminine hygiene products. He goes after Billy, and while Billy is on the stairs, decides to use the knot right then and there. And and he falls down and has like a fucking bone poking through his leg. So he's not going to be playing for a while.
Yeah, it's his the bone, one of the bones in his calf is basically like sticking out.
Yeah, there's punctured through the lots suit. Of blood.
Yeah. And he's not playing sports for a long time.
No sports ball for Billy.
Better sports ball Billy might have been able to play. That college scholarship has sailed.
Yeah. So, and, yes. Oh, God. Sorry, I got a really bad cramp in my back. So then Sabrina looks up and sees Theo around the corner on the stairs, like, kind of, you know, with the knot. So she talks to him after, and he says, like, it's like I heard this voice in my head just telling me to do it. And she's like, Sabrina says, like, well, like, you should do it, and it's what you want. And so she finds out the hard way that Satan is like, okay, well, I'll just fuck with your friends now. Thank you.
Yeah, it's. I you know, and it definitely getting into Theo's anger, because, you know, Theo is obviously very shaken at what happened, and also rightfully so, because Theo's a good person, you know. Theo, as mad as Theo is, I don't think Theo wanted to horribly maim somebody. No. Even though, yeah.
It's, I mean, Theo wanted to play an elf during, like,
the Christmas
mall. One. Yeah, I mean, like, for the mall Santa, he just wanted to be an elf. I mean, Theo's a good-hearted person.
Yes, and it's just, it's upsetting, obviously. And this also ties into Sabrina trying to get out of the deal with Lucifer, because it's it's clearly escalating. And, you know, one of the things, because she goes to Aunt Hilda, and because she also asks Aunt Hilda, because she knows that Ambrose and Hilda have been asked something, and Hilda's is a button. That's the boon, is Lucifer or Satan gives Hilda this button, which, by the way, when she first says button, I'm thinking of a button you sew on.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, wait, what? I was like, oh, okay, button.
Apparently
you push.
It sounds like a box with a button.
Yeah, and doesn't tell her what it does, just gives it to her to push whenever she wants. And she does at one point, but she doesn't know what happened. Yeah, she's absolutely no idea.
Yeah, she's looking, like, combing news periodicals to see, like, if there was a big fire, if there's an explosion, something big happened and killed a bunch of people, but she's not finding anything.
Yeah, and it's freaked her out. And so when Sabrina asks her that, she's also saying, like, well, how do I get out of this and, you know, and protect the people that I care about? And Hilda has an idea, but when she has this lingering spell, the one that she gave to Theo, that's, you know, Sabrina goes to try to stop Theo, but of course it's way too late, and Lucifer is slowly getting his hands into her friends and, you know, manipulating them. And also, obviously, trying to get Sabrina the leading role in the play, because clearly Satan is not impressed with Dorcas either. And also,
but also,
his reviews are nothing are basically hardcore Siskel and Ebert right now. Two sandbags down.
Sorry. Fair, but Yasha should say that Hilda said that she was just going insane with the, like, the curiosity of, no, like, what the hell did I do? And so she broke open the box and there was nothing in there. And she was saying, I think he just wants to have proof that you'd be ready to do what he wants you to do.
And you've also... And then the other person we should probably also address is Ambrose. Ambrose is, just sounds tragic. We have no idea the extent of what happened, but Lucifer is just evil to Ambrose. Because Sabrina goes and asks him, what did Satan make you do? And he tells her that he had to write a letter to a young warlock who he knows had a crush on him, on Ambrose. And he had to basically, you know, there was a, he doesn't go into the details of what he had to write, but he then had to send it to this warlock who had a wife, had a family. Mm-hmm. And he then says, I don't want to talk about what happened. And that's it. And Ambrose is clearly just traumatized. Right. By having to do that. So in the case of Hilda, you know, she's has that point where she's like, he just wants to see if you'll do it. It looked like he was trying to actually really hurt Ambrose. Mm-hmm. And that's just, whatever it was, whatever the extent, it's clearly has left a mark on him.
Yeah.
So again, it's so frustrating not to be able to say other things. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, because there's also like a lot of other fun things going on, because you've got Zelda having her petty little squabble with the other witches because Zelda's earned Father Blackwood's favor, and
with Shirley Jackson, the witch Jackson. Professor.
Well, I love that the first one, it's the first thing that Shirley Jackson tries to do to Zelda is cause a statue to fall on Zelda's head. Mm-hmm. And she looks over and she sees that. Like, she basically tries to kill Zelda. Mm-hmm. It's like, God damn. And then while Zelda is like directing the play and everything, she starts coughing and she literally like coughs up a humongous toad. And she, at first she thinks the kids have played a joke on her, but then Prudence points out, like, that's not our familiar. That belongs to, you know, Professor Jackson. And it's, I love that, you know, now Zelda's got Jackson's familiar and she's boiling water. She's got him in like a jar and she says like... And she says to Hilda, because, like, Hilda's all like, oh, like, you know, that poor little, like, you know, like, familiar, he didn't do anything. And she's like, ugh. Like, it's one thing to try to kill me, but she embarrassed me in front of the students. I'm like, Jesus. Zelda, priorities.
She's like, you can't take it out on this poor innocent creature. And she basically, she asks, Zelda asks Sabrina about, like, how would you like some frog's legs for dinner? And she's like, can't we just have pizza?
I wrote down frog legs, pizza? Combo question. That's the both words.
I love it because Hilda takes the frog away and she goes, come on, little my little love. Wouldn't you like some pizza? She's just being so sweet to the little froggy. And I love it.
To be fair, like, I get that. It's not...
Well, you know, it makes me think, like, with this and, like, all the previous, like, Hilda things, I think that Hilda would definitely be Hufflepuff. Like, hardcore Hufflepuff.
And you know what? I would honestly, I would put Zelda in Slytherin.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, most definitely.
Oh, yeah. We'll do a sorting hat soon for all of them.
I think that's a good idea.
Yes. But yeah, no, Zelda has something else to get her revenge as she creates a little voodoo doll of Shirley Jackson and then sticks a little worm, a little maggot worm in the ear of the Shirley Jackson doll and starts singing a little song to the doll.
I had that song stuck in my head for a while.
The worms go in. Worms crawl in. The worms crawl out. The worms pinnacle on. Yes, and it causes, which the witch, this is a... The world building of witch magic is very bizarre to me because, man, you could easily kill somebody with just a voodoo doll and them not knowing.
Totally.
Because, Jesus Christ, like, she almost makes, like, you know, Shirley Jackson, like, jump off a ledge and says, like, you're going to knock this off? And it's like, okay. And then you never hear from those witches again.
So. And oddly enough, it's Hilda, our favorite Hufflepuff, our favorite Huffy, that shows her how to do it, too.
I know. It's like, oh, you just make this little doll, put a little worm in there, let's just patch it up, and then we're good to go.
Just sew the mouth. And oh, I love it.
So Zelda gets back, and from there on, she's just working on directing the play, and... You know, you've got, oh man, I'm just thinking about the play now, because you've got Dorcas being Dorcas, and, you know, Sabrina's being told, like, oh, like, you should play him, you should be here, and even Nicholas Scratch is coming up going, like, hey, can I rehearse with you?
Because she's the understudy to Dorcas.
Yeah, Sabrina's the understudy, and it's like, I'd rather, like, rehearse with you, and I'm like, I understand that Nick's kind of making the moves on Sabrina in a way, and also, but at the same time, I'd be like, even if I wasn't, I'd rather work with somebody who at least seems competent.
Yes.
I get it.
Oh, well, and then, but then, like, she starts to, Sabrina starts to choke on a slice of apple, and she, like, passes out and sees everybody, like, put in their head, their worried, you know, faces. But then there's, she sees Satan, and then she wakes up and Hilda tells her that she was choking on some apple, but, that Nick brought her there and, she saved her. But, I was thinking, like, from that point, I started wondering if it was like a dream she was having or some sort of, I don't know, like a fantasy sequence. Cause then she goes back to, her old high school too.
I think it's all, I mean, the, sometimes the one issue that is throughout this entire series is the time jumping between, like where she's going. I think it was just a played out scene. And then the next day she goes to her school and, that's when you realize that Satan's having influence on other areas when I think trying to choke Sabrina out doesn't make her change her mind about stealing a pack of gum or whatever.
I just thought that was kind of weirdly placed because it didn't seem to have anything to do with the other stuff, except for maybe Satan being like, I could kill you if you want.
I think he's trying to see, like, what's her button to push. Mm. I think that's really what it's played into. Because he starts, like, he gives Ross chicken pox. He also gives Dorcas chicken pox so that,
Right.
Yeah. Instead of the scarlet fever, though. Right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, man, chicken pox, it's so my time. Yeah. The entire world's anti-vax. I'm like, who knows when this time period's supposed to be? Just the influence of Satan, like, pushes through everything. They end up still getting chicken pox. But, yeah, so Rod's chicken pox and Sabrina, because Billy Marlin is no longer her reading partner, is now teamed up with Harvey. So, they're rehearsing. And I, again, this is, I think I told you before we recorded, I was reading this note and it made me smile a little bit because, you know, they're rehearsing and suddenly they, Sabrina and Harvey just start hardcore making out and Say again.
I was kind of laughing about it too, though, because it was just like, it was so high school. Like,
oh yeah, no, you'll, and then, she sees, because at one point Sabrina's getting that scratch on her back, the Satan's mark and everything. And while she's making out with Harvey, he takes his shirt off. She sees the mark down him, even though he can't see it. So, you know, it freaks her out and she stops and, you know, she's trying to make sure her friends don't get hurt. So she tells Harvey, no, we can't do this anymore. And you got us, we can't do this. And he's just like, well, I tried to get away from you and now you're coming back to me. And I wrote down, you know, like, you really are confusing Harvey again. And then I wrote back, explain breakup like I'm Harvey. I laughed when I wrote that. I laughed louder than I really should have.
Well, because I don't know if you mentioned before that they were working on like scenes from Romeo and Juliet, and Roz and Harvey were paired together. Well, they paired themselves up. And
yeah, well, and Sabrina kind of came at the last minute because she decided to go back to her high school, which is how she got paired with Billy Marlin. So,
and Harvey chose for the scene for he and Roz to work on was the kissing scene.
Like, I mean, it's also called the balcony scene.
Like, really fucking subtle, Harvey. But then, you know, Roz is having flashbacks to that steamy kiss that they had before, and when she saw it in The Cunning. And and then
never gonna get over that scene. But yes.
And so then Sabrina comes back and they're like, oh, well, we could just find a scene that has another person in it. We could, like, we could have you as the maid and you could, like, just see Harvey's face kind of fall. Harvey, no kiss. No.
Harvey sad.
No, Harvey. But then he's like, it gets kind of weird. He's kind of like being a little passive aggressive when talking with Roz and Sabrina. And Sabrina says, well, we have our own a stage play going on right now. And he says, is it The Crucible? And she says, is that a joke, Harvey? And Harvey does this classic Harvey look of like, is that funny? Harvey make
Did
funny?
I make good joke?
Oh, bless him. Bless his dumb little heart. Yeah. But then he's like, he's saying, like, making it a point to say, we're partners together and I'm Romeo and she's Juliet. And basically, like, it seems like he's being kind of passive aggressive. At least it seemed to me.
But, yeah. Also, it's like, I'm totally moving on. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may not be fine, but I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm totally fine. I don't even think about you at night.
Yeah, when I'm alone.
Exactly. Oh, why would I think about you? No, of course not. We're done. Yeah. Like, friends.
I don't call my hand Sabrina anymore. So what do you think of that?
That sock has some of your hair attached to it, glued on? Nope, not you anymore. Oh, okay, dark hair. I'm going too far down that hole now.
It has glasses now.
Not like Sabrina. Not like Harvey. Oh. Nice.
Oh. My Socko now has glasses. So what do you think of that?
Okay.
Boy. But yeah.
So we probably should get back because now things are getting really dark in the Satan testing Sabrina world when Satan makes Salem sick.
Yeah, like I thought Salem was dead.
Oh, that one really just affected me because again, you all know the story of my little black kitty who passed away and everything from natural causes. But
not
still,
Satan,
like,
Satan, little, Satan. Little black kitty. Yeah, I saw that and I was like, you can't kill him. No, Salem.
Well, and then Sabrina's like, okay, I'll steal gum. And he's like, no, you have to burn down your school.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That upped the ante a little
bit. I'm not saying you should do it when people are in there, but you're giving a lot of people, you know, a lot of disenfranchised and disaffected youth an idea here.
Yeah.
And he says to do it at night when nobody's around. And this is where it gets into the story of Abraham and Isaac, because she's both Lilith and Satan are in the school watching her. And he's, you know, she's going like, she's not going to do it. Like, even though, like, Sabrina's like pouring the gasoline down the hall. She's like, she's not going to do it. She's not going to light the match. And of course, unfortunately, Lilith loses this bet because, you know, she's trying to save Salem, which I completely understand. It's like, okay, building versus life. Let's be fair here. You know, especially the life of a very adorable familiar.
Yes.
Cute black
cat. I mean, I would do it for Salem.
I thought you were going to say, like, look, that frog that they were going to eat, I would have done for the frog. It's burning down a school. It's like, Linda.
It's just burning down a school. Come on.
Admissible in court. But then Lucifer stops her from doing it entirely. And so it's a very, like, Abraham and Isaac thing where, you know, God stops Abraham from killing Isaac.
And hello, Isaac's Mikasa. Like, what the fuck, Dad?
Sorry, my cat just came up and started sniffing the microphone. So if you hear, like, little purrs, you know, that's Mikasa coming up and saying, "Ha, I want to be recorded." So, excuse me.
Welcome but, yes, to Mikasa Tsukasa. A new podcast for kitties by kitties.
Kitty ASMR, she's just purring into the mic.
Oh, I actually have a video that I watch with my cat at bedtime with Kitty ASMR. It's got the kitty purring and it's got a lullaby and anyway.
I'm now to check for cats because, you know, we've had them climb to climb the Christmas tree right now. And I'm looking behind me going, well, okay, just making sure. Making sure rocket's stepping away from the mic. Just making sure. Okay, we're good.
I have to say
kitties
that
are still on the ground.
One thing I found very, very touching was that that Lilith was watching the passion of Satan Morningstar. And
passion of Lucifer.
Yeah, and... yeah, that's right. Lucifer Morningstar, a Faustus Blackwood production.
A Faustus Blackwood interpretation.
Yeah.
Which let's, before we even get to Lilith's like reaction, because again, this is where I think it really humanizes Lilith.
Uh-huh.
Because we should probably talk about what the play is. It's because it starts out with sort of the idea of biblical Adam having three wives. Mm-hmm. So you see a couple things. First, you see the false god, played by Ambrose, kicking Lucifer, played by Nicholas Scratch, out of heaven. And Lucifer being all like, you don't understand. Like, this is not how, like, we should run things and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Not as important. But then you see Lilith, played by Sabrina, because, of course, Dorcas has chicken pox. Because Lucifer, talking to Stolas, played by Agatha. And they are discussing the story of Lilith being Adam's first wife and not wishing to be subservient to Adam. Mm-hmm. And that's when Lucifer comes across Lilith wandering, broken in the desert, which we should probably mention that even Zelda has an issue with this writing, because in the stories of how they were raised on the Lilith story is that, no, she was a survivor. She got her own food. She built her own shelter. She didn't need Lucifer to give her shelter or food or anything. Like, but, you know, Zelda is kowtowing to Father Blackwood right now. So, like, even right. they're pointing out the interpretation is a poor interpretation by Father Blackwood, but for very obvious reasons.
Yeah, because he saw men up, women down.
Yeah, well, because in the end, it falls to the Lilith character kneeling down and mm-hmm. pledging her fealty to Lucifer. And I think that what's interesting, and this is where real Lilith is watching the play, she starts to get really upset, like mm-hmm. crying. And to me, it's almost like maybe Father Blackwood in his very horrible sort of rewrite actually captured a more realistic picture as to what actually happened.
That's what I was thinking, even though, because he's like, I think he knows exactly who she is.
Yeah. No, he even says it. He calls her out as who she is earlier in season one. He's like, I know who you are. You're not so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Like, you're demon goddess. Like, okay. That's when I couldn't call her Lilith, and I was really trying hard not to call her Lilith.
So. But yeah, I think part of that is just him kind of fucking with her.
Yeah, and also he's also getting across, because he's getting across this very patriarchal ideas mm-hmm. of like men top, women bottom, women subservient, you know, very similar to how like the, you know, Old Testament, New Testament, everything, the Bible's written, especially in Genesis. I still remember the right. name of that book. It's like, wait, which one was it? Genesis. Yes. So yeah, it's, also, I don't want to bypass this. I just want to say about Father Blackwood mm-hmm. because it's and his appearance, his representation of an audience member at his own fucking play. Oh my god! So it is definitely put on like a high school production week. All the parents show up, and like you know, in this case, the whole coven shows up. All the adults and everybody's watching. They're all clapping as the curtain raises. Father Black was the only one not clapping. He's sitting next to Prudy. He's got his hand on his cane, and he's looking angry. And I actually wrote down, going like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, you emo bitch? They're performing your play, and you look like they're performing like some piece of shit." Oh my god, I was just, it bugged me so much. And of course, then the play goes on the very beginning. And then when they end the play and, you know, Sabrina Lilith is bowing before Lucifer and Nicholas Scratch, Father Blackwood goes like, yeah! Yes. He's about to cry also. And I wrote down, emo bitch. God, you're gonna hate him more as the show goes on, Linda. Trust me, I have no idea. Like,
grow a pair of ovaries, you fucking emo bitch.
Yeah, and of course, Hilda and Zelda are there, like giving their full support, and mm-hmm. Blackwood's like, "Oh, Zelda, you did the perfect version of my writing of it," and it's like, God,
I think Father he's just Blackwood so much. Trying to get in them panties again, them chonies. Well,
of course, the flagellations and God, ovaries leaving body, all organs leaving body.
Oh,
side note, because it's not really as important, but you do get the explanation that Dorian is Dorian Gray in this episode. He confirms it.
He says something like, everybody has their devils or something like that, or vices. Mine is a painting.
Well, I think it has to do also with Sabrina being tasked to steal the gum at that mm-hmm. point, and she's wondering if anybody else is asked to do that. In this case, Dorian mentions the portrait.
Yeah.
So yes, it is that he is that Dorian Gray. Mm-hmm. Just slide bring that up because, yeah, it's important. And then, of course, at the end, you've got the real Lilith basically washing the hooves of Lucifer, mm-hmm. you know, saying like, hey, I always, and he's saying like, hey, look, I always win, bitch. So you're going to follow my plan now. And
Well, but and he the passion, it was like they were kind of portraying Lilith like, you will never be alone now, and you will always be at my side. And you know, that part like has her crying. And I think that that part was accurate. And that's why it's like hurting her so badly, because she was supposed to be the top bitch and she was supposed to be the one at his side. But now, he's like, she confronted him about, how she heard that, Sabrina is supposed to serve at his side and blah, blah. And so after she loses the bet, he says, you know, poor Lilith, so lonely. It's like, oof, oof.
But he gives her Stolas back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was like, you're so lonely, but I have a surprise for you. I have a gift so you won't be so lonely anymore. Gave her Stolas back. And I'm thinking, she's probably thinking, bitch, I killed him. Like, I don't fucking want Stolas back.
She's really happy, though, to get him back. So, I mean, the more lifetime companion of Stolas. And we also have to end with Sabrina does end up stealing some gum.
She does, just because she wants to.
Yeah. Now she's like, okay, I'm going to walk off with this gum. I don't know if she grabbed better gum this time.
But I hope so.
She stole gum.
May as well make it something worth it.
I was going to steal fruit snacks for Satan because it's the crap gum. Somewhere out there, there's somebody going like, I liked Fruit Stripes. Trust me, you liked Fruit Stripes as a kid because of the cartoon zebra. Go back and try it. It's not that good. I remember liking it as a kid too, but when I look back on it, no, it was the crap gum.
Yeah, Fruit Stripes, not my thing, but I still can. It's been a while since I've had gum, but I can still dig some watermelon flavored gum. Mm, damn, good stuff.
Yeah, I'm not much in the sweet gums anymore, like the fruit-flavored ones. Used to be okay with those, but now it's, yeah.
You know,
I do like a good cinnamon gum every so often.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I used to like
Wintergreen, spearmint are fine, but yeah, any of the fruit-flavored ones, it's a little too much for me. I once got Sour Patch Kid gum, and that was, no, don't do that. That is made for children.
My cat, Mr. Khan, has been making me think of the Sour Patch Kid commercials, because like he'll be like roughhousing too much with one of my older kitties, Cammy, and she's Kamala Khan. They're sweethearts, but she'll obviously not be having a fun time, and she'll have her ears down, like, and then next thing you know, he's like really sweet and he's licking her head. And it's like, first he's sour and then he's sweet. But, oh, freaking cats. Just a small thing. When I was looking up the cast and crew for this, it has listed, now this person doesn't even have a picture. I can't even remember if they had any speaking lines, but the actor's name is Cavendish Hare and their character's name was Ed Dursley. So I was like,
nope, not that one.
I bet he was like one of the professors or something.
Yeah, probably. I'm trying to think like where they would have, yeah, where he would have been present. I'd have to look that up. We should probably also say, like, everybody recovers from chicken pox. Nobody dies. Harvey's going to go visit Roz, who's recovering from chicken pox. Mm-hmm. And obviously Dorcas is getting better, too. So, yeah. It's,
And Salem's well.
Oh, yeah, Salem's better. Obviously, Salem's much better. Or else we would have probably brought that up at the top saying like, what the fuck, man? Like,
and this is the last episode of us covering Sabrina. Because fuck you, show.
Oh, and the claw marks are out of Sabrina's body, or gone from Sabrina's body. So
right, yeah.
All good. They're having the celebratory drinks, and that's Mark when Dorian, you know, comes and explains to him, so to her, about being Dorian Gray. And yeah, everybody's happy. Everybody's back to normal. And Lilith is suffering. So yeah.
Lilith is suffering.
Yes, it's like, again, the knowing is hard.
She's evil and all, but I can't help but like feel kind of sorry for her.
Oh, like I said, this episode, you really are capturing her humanity. Mm-hmm. You're really looking into who she is as somebody who actually has feelings and emotions. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I can't wait for next episode though. I just remembered what it was, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be fun. Next episode, Sabrina. We'll talk about what we're gonna be covering next soon.
I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, you should be. You'll like it. You'll have. It's a lot of fun.
I want to go through like the whole season, but I want everything to be fresh in my mind. So, like, practicing restraint and like hating it. I feel like we've covered it pretty well though.
Yeah, no, I think we've addressed everything, and you know, it's like I said, there's things that I just wrote down, can't talk about, not gonna say anything. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
We got our cat trying to chew on the bubble wrap that our new 2021 ornaments came on our desk, and my husband keeps picking her up and putting her on the ground, you know. And she's like, what?
That's why Mr. Khan isn't allowed in the office where I record this, because he keeps jumping up on my husband's desk behind his monitor and the computer and all the stuff. And he knows that he's not supposed to, but like, if he's not doing that, then he's coming up and cuddling with me. And he likes to be held like you burp a baby.
Well, see, that's the difference between you and me. You have an office. We're in the family room, you know, so it's, yes, that's why I can also turn around and watch the cats try to not climb the Christmas tree. And also they're wandering around the whole house, kitchen. Yeah. And by the way, you need to come out and see my house.
I do. I know.
I know this is like totally recording, but I'm just pointing this out right now. Listeners, tell Linda on Twitter to come out and see my new house.
I have that.
God damn it.
That backpack I got from work for you, too.
Exactly. Make a time. Come out and see my new house. I have nothing going on next weekend.
Yeah. Listeners, if you don't know, I work for Funko and Loungefly, and we got an awesome Grogu in the parade, huge Grogu balloon, and one of my coworkers got to hold him like one of the ropes. So
yeah, and I noticed she didn't fly away. So
she didn't fly away. Well. Yeah,
yeah. See, nothing to be worried about.
Yeah, actually, she got some really cool pictures. I gotta send them to you.
But sounds good.
Yay.
We were just talking about me and not the listeners. This is going to be our private time. Private thing.
You guys can just imagine what they look like. No, actually, I got the okay from her to share them with the listeners. So, yay. I shall share them. Anyway.
Look for those on Twitter.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. Like, why aren't you? Because, Linda, you don't ever post anything on there. Oh, right. Okay. Good point. If all things go as planned, I'm going to be earning my master's degree and finishing the program up in the end of January. So I should have much more time to actually do things other than studying. So look forward to that. Please listen, subscribe, rate, and review Bed Knobs and Broomflicks on Apple Podcasts, because it helps other people find us and it helps boost us to the top when people are searching for certain things. Remember, you can find Bed Knobs and Broomflicks on Twitter. We are at Broomflicks, BROOMFLICKS. And you can write to us at broomflicks@gmail.com. And check out our show at bedknobsandbroomflicks.com. There you could also check out my other podcasts, Videorama and Cage's Kiss. You could find me on the amazing podcast that covers specific movie themes, Videorama. Also, you could check me out in the second season of Forza Crowd, where I play Mrs. Halverson. And my brother got to play Dylan in, I think, 3 episodes. So, yeah, check it out. It's fun. Jane, where can the people find you?
Holding vigil outside of the virtual home and heart of Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, R.I.P. Right.
That made me sad. Oh. He was 91, so not to the extent of unlikely or sudden, but it still made me sad because, man, it's not just Into the Woods. So many of his musicals had such an impact on me. And I love a lot of his stuff. So, yes. And I'm going to be playing a lot of Finding the App on the way to the Forum today. And yeah.
I think it's obvious that he listened to our podcast on both our podcast episodes on Into the Woods. And he thought, like, thank you, Jane. Now I can die. And we decided already that his last words were indeed, dwarves are very upsetting.
Death rattle. No, the actual death rattle. Not he didn't say death rattle, but that would be really funny also.
Death rattle.
Yes. Death rattle. Dwarves are very upsetting. Death
rattle. Oh, damn, that was a stage direction.
Not supposed to read the stage directions. Lighting goes up. That's not a line.
What does that have to do with my knob?
Anyways.
I allegedly, that's what he said. Allegedly. I'd like to thank Doug Walters and Red Wire Black Wire for allowing us to use their song Compass. And yeah, RIP to Sondheim.
And catch us on the next episode. We're going to take a little break from Sabrina and we're going to cover The Legend of the Christmas Witch, 2018 movie. It's free on Amazon and Tubi. It is in Italian. So, and I don't think there's any English language. So this will be fun. We came across this, so we're hoping to have it for the holiday season.
I think the thing on Tubi said that it was dubbed.
I was just looking at the Amazon one because it was the first thing I stumbled upon, and I'm just like, well, there it is. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to search anymore. And you're like, it's on Tubi. I'm like, nope, it's on Amazon. That's it. I am not going to put in any other effort to look. That's where I can see it for free. That's where I'm going to see it.
Excellent. Well, until then. What's that got to do with my knob? The passion of the knob.
I was going to say, no, it's what's that got to do with my knob?
Acting! Again,
acting, thank you. Abel Cohen, splendid, actually awesome work on bad acting. Yes.
Most definitely.
You brought back memories. Thank you.
So many fucking memories. I'm just like, not the devil, but me thinking, you know, I could fucking do that better. Maybe if I just dropped the sandbag on her. Allegedly.
Satan was right. Bumper sticker.